Hello and welcome everyone to an incredibly, probably this is going to be the most important episode ever of MTG Potpourri.
Ichiban! Ichiban!
I don't know what that means.
Number one!
I honestly didn't know what that would Ichiban stood for. I am monolingual.
Monolingual?
Yeah. Oh, I guess bilingual. I do speak the language of love.
So who are you? Who am I talking to here?
So you're talking to Tom. I am the magic scrub of this podcast, who will be talking later in the episode about his outdoor, I guess, cat utopia that he purchased.
Cat oven, yeah.
Cat oven.
You just spoiled the end of the cast for Tom.
I did. Oh, I've... Can you guys don't realize... I have no...
Can you please spoiler alert next time?
I made a complete list of off-topic topics.
Yeah, but now you're spoiling,
including backup actual
somebody
research
right
articles
is
to back it up.
Why are you leaking our cast information, Tom?
It's kind of what this episode's about, guys. We're just going to be leaking all over the place. Depends of Magic podcast.
Right now,
there's that
is
many
holding
leaks.
A magnifying glass to the screen, and they are reading all the out of context topics that we're going to talk about over the next 9 months worth of shows.
I'm just going to say it depends.
9 months worth of shows down the drain, Tom.
Oh. And just
look, Adam's so mad he just
turned off his video. So that is going to be the theme of this night, because apparently Skype is having group video issues.
Luckily, Adam, I believe he's wearing the exact same outfit as his picture there, so you're not going to even notice.
Well, no, I don't know if you guys remember the old Conan. Remember when they would have the picture of the person, they would just cut out the mouth? That's what I'll do for Adam. I'll just have a static picture, and I'll just go, we'll just have him pretend to be talking. But joining me for this epic podcast is Conley Woods.
I'm the only person that is able to be seen, so...
Yeah, well, they can see me, I hope.
No.
Adam just looks intimidating. His picture looks like he wants to fight me.
Could you draw like a little mustache?
Do you get the same feeling that he just...
There he is, he's back, So thus far, we've introduced both hosts that are reliable and consistently here, and then there's our other host who is not so reliable, Adam Sporsky.
Hi, everybody.
You make us all like Adam's the one that tanks his podcast every week.
Hey, all the thing is, one of our feeds cut out, and it wasn't mine, and it wasn't yours.
Healy showed up.
So is my video actually showing now?
It is.
Yes.
Okay.
You weren't wearing clothes before, right?
Yeah. Okay. So I've got like a 12-port USB hub, and it's powered, and it seems great. And it's been like, I think that's on the fritz, because my headphones have been cutting out. Like, things have been like, it's like a little like power something trips. I don't know.
It's probably really, a vibrating chair.
Anyway, I'm here because I've like begged you guys to cast. I started begging a week ago, was it? Literally?
I know, and I got blizzarded, and everything got screwed up. It's Denver.
Yeah.
And I was also, I think, killed one of those.
But it's factually untrue. I'm the one that tanks the cast most of the time. I'll take that.
What?
I think
that's so completely me, 95% of the time.
You guys are so quick to backpedal on the joke I doubled down on for you.
I know, but when you say it, it makes it too real, and then I'm staring at Tom right there, and it's just too hard to not admit.
You can't lie. Look at Adam's face. You can't lie to him. I just keep thinking about spoilers and leaks and depends. That's just running through here.
What else did you leak, Tom, besides our show notes?
Leak? I have a hard time not leaking Christmas presents. That are
really?
Going to the kids.
So you just don't. You're not good at keeping lies. Is that true?
In general, am not good at keeping any sort of secret. That has been well known. Because I actually put together all of the Christmas gifts early because it was like a bouncy hut and a weird. Did I talk about this last time?
They could hear you right now.
They are asleep. Hopefully to God, they are asleep.
You said you're at single dad mode tonight. You have no idea where those children could be. They could be right outside your door, and you just announced bouncy hut when nobody at home cares, and all you did was give a 1% chance you just leaked. You gotta tighten up.
Gotta tighten up that information sphincter. Don't let that info leak.
Why'd you have to go there?
Information sphincter. We do have a title for our podcast.
So
prevent those leaks.
So recently, Watsy's information sphincter had a bit
gaping wide open.
It had a bit of an issue because we saw a Kozilek and a waste card. Those were our cards that we saw. How long ago was this? This is probably like a month and a half ago.
It was over a month ago. I believe it was like shortly before Thanksgiving because we talked about it on our last cast.
Yeah, so we saw those. We speculated on, or everybody speculated on what those symbols could mean and whatnot. And I got to admit, when that happened, I was not confident that that was a true leak, and I thought that there was a good chance it was an official leak because those two cards specifically being spoiled reminded me very much of the Planeswalker. If you remember when Liliana was first spoiled before any other Planeswalker, it was like her without a text box. It was just like numbers and whatnot. I think they actually spoiled the whole card, but they didn't explain how it worked. And we just saw a bunch of numbers, and everyone speculated on what these numbers meant, how the Planeswalkers worked, if they took damage, blah, blah, blah. And everyone was like, this is cool. I kind of thought that he did the exact same thing with Kozilek here, where it was like crazy symbol showing up on a card. Like, it doesn't matter that this card is spoiled. If we don't tell you how it works, you're still going to speculate, and that's going to be cool. That's kind of the feel I got from it.
So for listeners, Magic turns over. The average Magic player turns over every 2 to 3 years, I believe. Like, that's kind of like anecdotally what I would say. If you look at the competitive field, that's from the Wayback Machine of about 10 years ago, when Planeswalkers were first introduced to the game. So that's what Conley's talking about. The Liliana he means is the Liliana, the first Planeswalker ever saw.
Yeah, it was in Lorwyn, and we knew Planeswalkers were coming from various things like Tarmogoyf, for example. And then when we finally saw a Planeswalker, they literally presented the card Liliana Vess, and without any notes of how it worked at all, we just saw this new card with a bunch of weird numbers and symbols,
like no rules. They're just like, what the heck?
Everyone was like, what the hell? Like, is that loyalty? What's that loyalty number mean? We didn't call it loyalty at the time, obviously. We're just like, is that its toughness? Does it have power? We had no idea what it did. And it was kind of fun because we literally had the card in front of us, and we still were speculating on it, and that was fun. And there was a little bit of that with Kozilek. I think it was much easier to solve with Kozilek because there was so much other context involved, but it was still a very similar thing. So I kind of was like, hey, I don't even know if this is a fake leak or not. But then, recently, that leak kind of exploded, and instead of just having a Kozilek, we were given basically 80% of the Mythic Rares in the set, along with all of the expeditions from the set, letting us know that they were going to redo expeditions, which I guess was not even a surefire thing. We weren't like guaranteed that by any means.
We were. So to add some context, we were. We knew that there were 20 more expeditions coming, 45 in total. They announced that it was covering both sets of the block. So Oath has unique expeditions from Zendikar. You're not going to open a Scalding Tarn in Oath of the Gatewatch. That is only going to happen in Battle for Zendikar. But the other part is that in between that happening and the first Kozilek Wastes spoilers that kind of came together was the World Magic Cup weekend was happening. And that first day, that Friday, Wizards, posted and basically confirmed Kozilek is real. Colorless mana is, a basic colorless land is coming.
Barry's land is
basically
here.
That produces colorless mana, I should say, because all lands are colorless.
And it's important to note that they did confirm it here, but originally they planned to announce it here. Like, this was the plan for the big announcement. Like, Kozilek was supposed to be revealed at this show. So they basically, at this point, we knew it was a real leak and not a WotC plan thing.
And then Sunday night, after the World Magic Cup ended and kind of Barcelona shut down and yay Team Italia, great job, guys. That's when, like, this second wave of what looked like kind of, either hand-cut or, like, test-cut cards, like a test printing, because it also had foils from, it had an old Urza's Rage foil, and that's been a dual deck, for a long time ago. It had the two foils that look like they're upcoming in Blessed versus Cursed, the Shadow of Innistrad themed dual deck, and it shows Geist of St. Trap, which isn't that surprising given it's been a promo multiple times, including I believe regional PTQs, as well as a new card that looks to be coming in Shadows of Innistrad, some demon. So like it's showing cards that are from like. Not just the upcoming set, the expeditions and some of those mythics, but like the set beyond that, which is just absolutely unheard of these days. Anyway, sorry.
I thought it was incredibly cool when we got to see the Waste basic land, because you have this basic land that doesn't have a subtype.
We can get back to that in a second. Okay. So let's finish. Let's round out those leaks. So along with those leaks, basically came all the mythic rares and the expeditions of the set. So there was a lot of cool expeditions. Hopefully anybody watching this either has already seen these things or knows there's spoiler alerts. But there was a lot of cool expeditions like Ancient Tomb, Strip Mine, like cards that you would not expect. And these are cards, keep in mind, you can play expeditions in limited. Like, somebody at the Pro Tour is going to get turn one Strip Mine or something.
God, that's annoying.
It's going to be absurd. Anyway. So the fact that it was the Mythic Rares and the Expedition spoiled, that's like, I would argue, if you took all the excitement out of a set and you broke down percentages, like between those two sets of cards, that's probably like 80% of the excitement level. Maybe
yeah, there's a bit handful of good uncommons.
Yeah, there's some good, a couple of good uncommons, some rares, and then maybe like full art new lands, what they look like. Like there's a little bit of excitement there, but for the most part, you're looking at the really cool mythics, and the expeditions were a huge deal. And I assume that they were not going to show, if they're going to showcase the expeditions, it was going to be over a long period of time. They were not going to just like, here's 20 of them. That's just dumb.
They did announce they were going to show the expeditions over basically leading up until the official preview. So like the month of December, that was kind of be our gift is they're going to show us all the expeditions and kind of walk through them one by one. And I assume kind of spread it out, have artists share some. So if they painted original art, it's a big deal for that. I know that they I want to say Spanish version of IGN, if I'm remembering correctly, had. The green white draw card land,
Horizon Canopy.
I believe they showed Horizon Canopy, the expedition like shortly after all the expeditions kind of leaked out in this leak. So they clearly had a plan to use the expeditions to kind of begin building, you know, kind of some anticipation for the set, you know, using reprints. So not new cards, just new versions of cards you get to open, beginning to build, you know, their marketing and their plan to lay out what was going to be an oath.
So my point kind of this is, even though if you go to MTG Salvation or whatever spoiler site you prefer right now, and you click on Oath of the Gatewatch, you're going to see, you know, 25, 30 cards out of 180 or whatever spoiled, and you're like, oh, that's not a big deal. But because these are the high-impact cards, because of these kind of like the chase excitement cards, a lot of the air of the set's already been let out. Like, I don't think we're... Are we going to talk about specific cards today? I don't know if we're going to do that. I assume we're going to talk about at least ours, or yours, specifically.
Yeah, we'll be spoiler light.
Okay, we'll be spoiler light. So we'll talk about a couple of these cards. But for the most part, like the kind of allure where you talk about two or three cool spoilers per podcast, that's kind of taken away. And until we get a couple more rares and mythics, which I imagine we're not going to get for a little while just because of how many were leaked, we really, you know, like if we were to just blow our load and talk about every single card right now in the cast, we're really going to run out of steam pretty quickly when it comes in terms of the excitement build up for this set. And that's kind of a crappy thing to kind of take away from the community. And I think that people, generally when people spoil a card, they feel like they're doing the community a service, like they're doing us a favor, like, hey, I got access to this information that you all really want to know. Here it is. But the reality is they're not leaking. They're not doing anything that was not going to be done. They're just expediting the process, which is as a game designer, somebody who is literally I'm paid to make people have fun and build up excitement. Like, you are actually doing a disservice by throwing it all out there. Like, I'm going to use a sex metaphor here, but like, sex is not nearly exciting without the tease, without the buildup. Like, if you could just have sex all the time, 100%, it would not be the cool, awesome thing that we all love, because there's a little bit of like buildup and rarity with it, and that's kind of what makes it exciting. Same thing with cards, same thing with sports. Like, if football was on every single day of the year, 365 days of the year, you might get pretty sick of it. There's no buildup to like, here's the off season, here's the preseason, my first game of the year, like, let me cherish these next 16 weeks. Like, you lose all that. It's kind of ice cream for dinner, if you will. And with these specifically, all that really happened was the excitement section was moved from, let's say, December, January, February, all to December. So, like, the amount of excitement is theoretically, let's call it the same. That's being gracious here. We're going to call it the same amount of excitement either way. But we still, like, condensed it and made it into this, like, very small kind of pop, as opposed to like this big fireworks show that kind of lasts hours and everyone's kind of sitting around and having a good time and discussing things and a whole bunch, like literally every card that is not the best card spoiled in this batch of cards, is going to get less attention than it would have if it was spoiled individually, because everybody's going to be focused on that one awesome card or that best card out of it, and it's going to get a bunch of hype, and then all these other cards just kind of start fade away, and they just lose a lot of the build-up and the excitement that makes them cool. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, I think that whoever did this was like, yeah, let's get some cards out there, but in reality, they just kind of hurt the community, they hurt one of the fun moments, one of the fun seasons, which is spoiler season, and they didn't do anything for us that we weren't going to, like, it wasn't like this information was being held onto and stored in a vault and nobody was ever going to see it. We were literally going to find it out within a month or two. So it's kind of, I don't know, it has very low value to do this kind of stuff. So I urge anybody considering or that gets proprietary information or anything like that in the future, just hold on to that. There's really, you're not doing anyone any favors by leaking that. Like, if it's something like, we found a cover-up of WOTC employee, you know, selling illegal something, like, of course, that's the kind of stuff you need to get out there. That's journalism. That's, like, uncovering important information that is being kept secret, but leaking spoilers is not doing that.
I mean, Colin, did you get to read a Trick's article about kind of how spoilers are damaging and kind of sabotages sort of that movie trailer? He uses the movie trailer analogy a lot, but kind of they plan how they present their cards to build the excitement and tease sure. these keys of information.
Sure, and I agree with that for the most part. I mean, he didn't really tell me anything I didn't know. I work in the industry, so I know the idea of like even though we have no games that have necessarily gone live to the public, we've done all kinds of spoilers to small groups of people or playtest to small groups of people, and like it's important to us that like those people, we have some level of trust with them, and they kind of do us right, and they keep their mouth shut and whatnot, because you know if some. Let's say this doesn't happen with cards, obviously, but let's say like some bad version of our game got leaked and like everybody just made a snap judgment about our game, and 6 months down the line we planned on reskinning the game, doing something completely different. Now like our image, our brand has been hurt in other people's eyes, and we almost can't recover that. It doesn't matter how good the secondary product is, some number of people that saw that crappy first version are just never going to play our game now.
Well, it's almost like Xbox One with the whole you can't
sure.
do used games. I mean, they are still battling that today.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of pivot off of what you said, Tom, so what Conley's kind of talking about and like what you brought up there are actually very subtly different things. It's kind of important to kind of tie back to Trick's article. So Conley's talking about taking information that was never meant to be public and, you know, basically going forward with that. And whether it's an NDA or it's something that's like shared in confidence, like it can create damaging effects to a brand, to a company, for a variety of reasons. You know, that's versus kind of like what bad PR is. So Microsoft actually made a bad decision in the consumer's eyes, and they backpedaled from that. And so they've been recovering from what they actively launched as what their decision
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I guess they're the ones that shared that information.
Which is something Wizards has also done. Like, they've never not immediately, you know, made an announcement like there's no more modern Pro Tours, it's just all standard, and then undid that change basically immediately. So it's not like Wizards doesn't make these type of missteps too, but the difference is in kind of what brings me to Trick's article is, you know, managing a company is hard, and like I'm not a game designer, so for me spoilers are always like super exciting and super new, and I'm excited to see them. And as a Magic player, you know, like I've been doing this for 10 years now, just like following along with the spoiler season, really getting in everything that's new and cool. And when you have a, you know, from a marketing side, when you have a plan to build excitement, and that plan gets wrecked, it's absolutely a disappointment for everyone involved. And I think Trick's article spoke to that, you know, very loudly, that, you know, they have a plan to keep Magic successful. And part of that plan is driving excitement, which therefore drives sales. Is it the community's fault that spoilers happen? No, and I think that there's actually, you know, like, as much as I love Trick, I think there's some tone issues with kind of his article, and a little accusatory, a little hurt, you know, and instead of endearing kind of empathy, kind of created some animosity and friction, unfortunately, and, you know, maybe it needed an editing pass, maybe there's a better way to kind of say it, but the movie trailer analogy is a little different, because there are people that, you know, like, I'm one of those people, when I read a book, I'll actually go to the end of the book and kind of read the end of it. And I kind of want to understand, like, where am I going to end? Where am I going to end up? And, like, seeing where I'm going to end up and how I get there is kind of the cool part of the story. Like, I haven't seen Star Wars The Force Awakens. But I know what the movie is. I know what's in there. And I know there are some people that are going to listen to this that are like, I'm going to hold out for a month. I'm going to hold out as long as I can until I get to see it. I wasn't able to buy tickets for opening weekend. I've come to terms with that I'm no longer the biggest Star Wars fan that I know of, because I was, it felt like. And, you know, I just knew I'm going to hit spoilers, so, like, I looked it up after it was out.
Really?
But that's my choice. And, you know, the idea that a movie trailer is going to not make me see Star Wars, that's not necessarily true for everyone. But it's true for enough people that, from a marketing standpoint, it's why it's so difficult to kind of manage spoilers after the fact. Because even when you have a planned bad PR move, recovering from that is very difficult. But when you've got non-public information that was never even meant to be consumed, and it's consumed out of context without any sort of, you know, rationale, any sort of, you know, basis necessarily in reality, because it could just be, you know, a playtest of a beta of an alpha that gets gutted and dumped, but that's the perception people have of something, you know, some of the stuff Conley's been working on. How do you recover from something that wasn't even public to begin with? Sure. How do you reframe that? And yeah, it's a very, very difficult road to go down. And that's kind of, I think, what the ultimate kind of feel bad trick laid out is like, you know, Wizards is dealing not just with, you know, bad PR moves or like dealing with like public relations and trying to get things going. And every company makes missteps. Like, you know, I'm not saying companies can be perfect, but when you have a plan to make your brand successful and you can't even do that, you know, it's difficult. You know, how do you justify, you know, saying, well, we canceled half of our marketing plan for this? You know, that's a giant hole, and it's very, very difficult to kind of manage around that.
Yeah, like kind of imagine Watsy was planning a surprise birthday party for literally all of us, and then somebody came along and was like, hey, Friday night, you ready for that? And you're like, what? And they're like, your birthday party. And you're like, oh, like the birthday party's still going to happen, but like there was no longer that like sense of like excitement or whatever. It's kind of like that happened. Like the birthday party was going to happen. It was planned regardless, but the fun, exciting moment just kind of was taken away from it.
And if we just go back like 4 years, did you guys get similar feelings with New Phyrexia when we literally had the God Book plop out and we had literally the text for the entire set?
Well, that also sucked. That probably sucked worse, but at least there was like some immediate accountability, and it was kind of, I don't know,
it was kind of two scapegoats. So it was also more of a target, I guess, for
sure. But it was also, I think it was nice that it was kind of, that was the first time it was agreed upon, I think, that spoilers could hurt people. Like prior to that, spoilers happened so infrequently in such small batches and usually so close to a set that they almost were, they felt like a season, they felt like a buildup. But also I would say that WotC's official way they did spoilers was not very good back then. They did not have the same marketing strategy. They didn't execute on it nearly as well as they do today. So some amount of spoilers coming from third party people or whatever, it kind of added to the air of the season. I'm talking about 5, 6, 7 plus years ago.
Hang on, Conley. That wasn't always the case, and in fact, it was the opposite. Like all of Judgment was known a month before.
Oh no, when the entire sets were spoiled, those are terrible. I'm talking about when we get like when we would get one or two crazy cards that would just randomly, like somebody would, you know, get a booster and just and take a picture of it or whatever, and we'd have one card. Like this is when WotC was not doing like 6 weeks out spoilers and stuff like that, and they were only doing 2 weeks of spoilers, one card a day, that kind of stuff. Whenever a full set's spoiled or any large quantity of cards, obviously that hurts. When it was just like small quantities of spoilers coming through every once in a while, it kind of felt good. Like I was certainly somebody who would check MTG Salvation for the 2 weeks prior to a set and check every, and there'd be one or two new cards a day. It was not overwhelming. It kind of still had the same buildup, even though things weren't official. Then basically what happened is like all that process was just made official, and it was done much cleaner, much better. The cards we saw made more sense. We got to see exciting cards in the right order, and basically they just improved upon what the old kind of pieced together spoiler season was. And so now there is not really the same need for that, for, you know, individuals running around trying to acquire cards, because we know we're going to get this awesome spoiler season where they hand out a bunch of previews to a bunch of people that deserve it, like podcasts and writers and whatnot. Like those are content providers that could use the cards. So WotC's helping those out. We should respect that. And then in addition, like there are also certain cards that they just want to show off before other ones, like seeing Kozilek before Waste or whatever is like a big deal. That's like important. I'm sure that they had planned that. They might have done them simultaneously, but something along those lines. But like if we see Wastes and all that stuff weeks in advance before Kozilek, obviously this did not happen, but if we did, that could have easily taken the fun out of Kozilek. So I don't know. I much prefer that basically the official avenue is taken for spoilers these days, just because they've started doing such a good job with it, and I have full confidence in their ability to do so. Which was not necessarily the case 10 plus years ago, but I don't know. Hopefully we don't see any more spoilers like this. And there's we can't talk much about it because of the process, but there are apparently some bannings or something about leaks happening, so we'll know more about that by the time we podcast.
Yeah, because we are recording on the 21st, and it seems like stuff is happening right now, where the band suspended list was updated.
Story is developing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
That's a big deal. If there is official punishment handed out from this, that can mean a huge thing for future leaks. I mean, obviously we have Rancored Elf stuff in the past and whatnot, but that was always like one type of individual. We also had the God Book. Those are probably the two largest public leaks, I would say, and they both were handed punishments in a public manner. So, you know, depending on what this ends up being, let's see.
So for anyone kind of that is new to Magic in the past couple of years, and like Rancored Elf, like somebody put Rancor and Elf, what's the big deal there? So way back, you gotta throw in your time machine. So Time Spiral, everyone knows that it's one of the more unique Magic releases in history. It's got a full large set, but it comes in 18 card booster packs because there are three extra cards in it, and basically they are all reprints from Magic's past before that. And they're all basically the same, equally. They're kind of like a unique bonus rarity. So if you've ever seen an hourglass with a purple symbol, that's the Time Spiral bonus set.
Effectively a mythic rare before mythic rares existed.
Kinda.
Yeah, they were a little different rarity,
Yeah, it was like a special rarity. They were harder to find individual ones. But like a Chroma, Angel of Wrath, was the same. You had the same odds of getting that as you did Squire. So they had some excitement kind of disparity going on with those bonus cards. But basically what happened was that there was someone inside of Wizards, somewhere in the process, that was feeding information out. And Rancored Elf was the one that had this information. Basically, it was a photograph of cards with playtest stickers. You know, I believe a year and a half before Time Spiral was supposed to come out, or a year before it was out. And it basically showed a reprint card with basically a rarity symbol that didn't match up to any of the other rarity symbols that were on playtest cards that had been seen by anyone up to that point. And basically players, you know, kind of, you know, the community kind of collectively put together speculation that this card must mean that there is a special reprint. There are special reprints in Time Spiral, some throwback reprints, like something's going on here that makes it different. And it wasn't universally agreed upon because there's no information, obviously. But it's one of the few instances that Wizards was moved to litigation and brought litigation against this individual, you know, unmasked him from kind of the pseudo anonymity that the forum provided for him that he posted it to. You know, he came to some legal agreements about never doing that again, and that there would be, you know, basically some follow-up litigation should he engage in that type of activity, you know, encouraging or soliciting others to break NDAs. Well, whatever led to that relationship that allowed him to get that information, that's basically what they wanted to come to, is basically like, stop working to leak our stuff and we'll leave you alone. So like the ultimate resolution wasn't very, it kind of like petered out and it kind of simmered out to its natural conclusion, which was like Wizards did not actually sue someone into oblivion. They just got him to, you know, formally agree, I'm not going to do this thing anymore. You know, but it was big because Mark Rosewater commented on it. There were articles about it. It was like the drama of the Magic era. Like before Reddit was the thing it was and kind of the really dominant place to talk about Magic. If you want to talk about Magic every single waking moment of your life, MTG Salvation was the place where it was at. And so like it, there are people thinking like, is this the end of Salvation? Like, are they going to make the site go down? And like, you know, it was a big thing in the community. And so like, this is like these leaks happening is a thing that's been going on for as long as Magic's been around, more or less. Like, there are always some people privy to the information. There are always a very, very small handful that are, you know, inclined to, in one way or another, disclose that. You know, there's all the hearsay rumors of, like, well, certain pros, you know, get fed information from certain friends that happen to be designers or an R&D or other Wizards positions. And then there's the, you know, the hearsay of, like, you know, oh, you know, well, clearly Stibbs has to know what's coming up because, you know, he works events and does articles for Wizards. And it's like, I live in Washington, and when I visit Seattle, I eat sushi and hang out and draft. Like, I'm not an employee. I'm not there. And it's like there's all this presumption that the information's like super easy to get. And I think it's because, you know, perhaps it was easier back in the day. Now, when they do tours of the Wizards floors and things, they're very careful. It's public. When I was there for Community Cup, and maybe you can kind of comment on that, Conley, they took down all sorts of art and things. Like, the place where Creative was supposed to have all of this gorgeous concept art, all of these cool things to look at, it was just empty.
Yeah, for like, us, they left it all up, but they covered it up with, like, cloths and stuff.
Yeah, it's like when you can't have a creative department function without their visual board. I mean, that's just a thing art managers need. And it's like it was just not there. Like they go to reasonable lengths to keep those cool things cool away from us. And you know, it's not new and it's going to keep happening, but it's
everyone knows that it's really strange
how it never seems to go away. It's been going on for so long.
If you want information about new sets, you have to draft with Aaron Forsythe and then pass him a 20 when you ship him the pack. And then when he passes you back, there'll be markered information on your cards. Or maybe even a new card entirely.
See, I messed up. I passed a Hamilton, and I just got a dirty look, and he still kept the Hamilton. It was really weird.
That's fair. So, please nobody contact Aaron Forsythe right now and tell about this map.
Not a real story.
True story, though. Once I did a pre-release where I was like a guest out in L.A., gunslinging, and Aaron Forsythe was the other guest, and he let me borrow... I played this, like... I think it was... Oh, it was a mass polymorph deck with Primeval Titans, and the Primeval Titans were brand new, and I didn't have them... But Aaron, of course, working in RD, he was like, yeah, you're gunslinging at the pre-release. You can just borrow my playset or whatever. I was like, cool. And I totally forgot to give them back to him at the end of the release. And the next time I saw him where I had my Primeval Titans, it was like 7 or 8 months later at Worlds 2011. And literally after I'm done in the top eight and everything, that was like the tournament I did very well in. And I lost to Primeval Titans in the top eight. I'm like, hey, Aaron, I have your Primeval Titans. And I go to hand him. He's like, will you sign him for me? So I like signed his Primeval Titans and gave him back to him. But I had his Primeval Titans for like 8 months. It was awesome.
I totally thought Aaron was going to have some sort of pithy quip for you.
Oh,
for, like,
I'm sure he did. I don't remember exactly what it was. I'm sure he was witty. Like he's always
yeah. He's got the wittiest stuff. Like I thought I'd get that.
Sometimes.
But anyway, so
spoilers, huh, guys?
Spoiler alert!
I will post in the show notes. I did find a link on the mothership site up from 2006, June 19, 2006, about the Rancored Elf lawsuit. So it was basically an official response by Mark Rosewater. Interestingly, the second half of the article is the announcement of the promotion of Aaron Forsythe to the head of R&D. So it's kind of interesting that apparently in the same...
They put those in the same article?
Yes, the name of the article is Law and Order. The law part is about the Rancored Elf lawsuit, and then the order part is about the promotion of Aaron Forsythe to head of R&D.
I mean, both those, I guess, were probably good decisions, but the Aaron Forsythe promotion was probably a better decision.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. I was like, but I guess I hadn't thought about how, kind of going way back to the Rancored Elf and the God Book, just kind of how spoilers have, I guess, evolved in some ways. And it seems like you guys are coming more from, obviously Adam's very involved in, just the game in general coverage. You're seeing it more from, I guess, like almost like a marketing, expertise. That's kind of what you do for, part of your work. I understand.
That is my job.
It's also... Yeah.
Market stuff. Yeah,
it's not even just a marketing thing. Like some of it's just like empathy, right? Like you just put yourself in these people's shoes and know that they're making a product and they have a vision for it. Like it doesn't even matter what the product is. If you went up to somebody and they're like, "Hey, guess what? I have this idea and I'm going to do all this awesome stuff with it," and you're like, "I have a different idea for your idea," and that like they're naturally going to be offended. Like they have a vision for the thing that they want to do. Like let them carry that out. It almost doesn't matter what it is, and for you to kind of sabotage that, it's just I don't know. It takes some level of like cold heartedness to even get to there. They're like, yes, I'm willing to ruin these people's
work. I guess I would have felt that in the past, but now with social media, with like Facebook and stuff, where for a lot of casual players, they aren't going to MTG Salvation. They aren't going to. Maybe even the mothership site, they are literally getting their news from Facebook. I mean, that is a way a lot of players that I know that are very casual, that's where they learn it. So they're not even receiving the information if it was released on time, like as they planned. They're not getting it in the packaged way that maybe Wizards would want it. It's just showing up on their Facebook feed and they're like, oh, cool, there's a new colorless land.
Sure, but
that's
it's still,
awesome.
It still kind of works in the same way.
So let's add some context to here. So like there was a big Reddit thread about the kind of the Wizards response, and people read it, and I read it because obviously people have a lot of dissenting opinions, like didn't feel that this was right, or like Wizards aren't really the greatest storytellers, and there's a lot of positivity and a lot of negativity with any Wizards announcement. We're a very diverse community with a lot of strong opinions and a lot of people that are very intelligent and have strong convictions about the perspectives that they come to and why. I think that's the most polite way to put that we all have opinions.
And everybody else is wrong. You know, I hope you know that.
You know, I think everyone else's opinions are wrong, but that's why I have my own. Mm-hmm. but like, so let's compare and contrast. So it's like, it seems like, you know, like, okay, Wizards, you know, really kind of came out negatively, you know, really rubbed me the wrong way. But yet you'll notice, you know, I'm content manager for Gathering Magic. There are news posts about these leaks and stuff out there. But, you know, clearly, you know, Gathering Magic hasn't gotten DCMA notices to take anything down. You know, Wizards Hasbro Legal has never contacted me about something I posted. I've always sourced where the other information is coming from. It's already public. It's typically on Reddit or Imgur or Salvation, somewhere, you know, that has pseudo anonymity for people to kind of shield themselves behind. Nobody's contacted me directly about disclosing NDA'd information. You know, I am NDA'd. So if somebody did that, not only could I not do anything with it, you know, I'd be obligated to follow up with my Wizards contacts and pass that information back because that's problematic for, you know, the limited contracting work that I do. But compare that to what Disney has done with Star Wars The Force Awakens, to kind of go back to that. So I want to say in Mexico, there was a story basically like a week before the movie was out. Somebody bought off the shelf an action figure. I'm not going to describe the action figure because it was not something that was evidently obvious from the lead up to the movie. You know, if you're going with the trailer analogy here, Disney did not make this evident, you know, super evident. There were hints of it. There were some commercials that kind of pointed to it, but did not go out of their way to make it clear that this person had some attributes about them.
Trying to describe someone with really large breasts.
But basically, it spoiled a very significant plot point and a very meaningful thing to know about a character. This action figure made that available. So this person bought it. So First Sale Doctrine, you know, the store posted it wrong. Obviously, they should not have had this product because it had a street date and, you know, mix-ups happen. It's happened with Magic before where something goes on sale too early and whatever. But somebody bought it and posted pictures. So First Sale Doctrine, they now own this. The pictures they take of it are their photos. It's not something that, you know, a photo of something you own is not something that the company that produced that product owns. Once you have the photo, that is your photo. So they post photos of this, and basically Disney was full firebomb. You know, DCMA notices, lawyers out contacting, you know, basically went all out to, you know, basically subdue this information and actively worked against the Star Wars communities and kind of the typical sources that it would move through, getting the image removed, getting the post taken down, exercising their, you know, exercising what they feel they have a legal right to prevent people from seeing. So, you know, in comparison, there are multiple ways to kind of handle information. So there's like the Streisand effect, which I feel is like the more you try to take something off the internet, the more people see it. That's typically how these things go. And Wizards doesn't do that. They don't firebomb the community for talking about these things, for taking information that somebody else has already disclosed and put out there. You know, which is kind of interesting. Like, you know, what you speak to, Conley, while it may be coming out of order or sooner than people think, there is still some excitement that happens around that and still some positivity for upcoming sets, positive information that seems to come from the community when this thing's talked about. You know, and like, it seems like people don't give credit Wizards for making good PR decisions or disagreeing with how they make policy announcements and things like that. You know, communication with players, and, you know, there's a whole litany, you know, Magic Online, there's a whole list of things players can aggrieve about if they want to. But it doesn't seem like they actively go to, like, attack the community for being excited about the game. You know, which is I think kind of at least telling of their overall philosophy. Like they're not actively trying to destroy communities that talk about leaked information.
Not yet.
I don't.
Also, just a big DMCA thing appears on the video.
It would be from Disney though. You talked about Star Wars.
Star Wars on your Magic podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be crazy. Like, if I put that picture
on Gathering Magic,
I'd have a DCMA notice, and, you know, I would have gotten an email from a lawyer, I'm sure. Like, you know, is it journalism to talk about that? Probably. You know, is it right to, you know, issue takedowns? That I'm not so clear on. I'm not actually a lawyer. But, you know, it just seems kind of a little incongruent with, you know, if you want to support a community, you don't you don't bomb them for something that somebody else messed up with and made public, or somebody chose to make public. Like, once something's on the internet, it's there forever.
Yeah, that's
and anyone who's 17 or 18 years old and thinks that all of their posts from when they were 15 years old on Facebook talking about things, you need to delete those posts because they will be found.
Thank you. I wasn't a teenager when social media was around.
They will be found when you run for the when you're looking for a promotion or for your first job. Those things never die. So get rid of them. Just delete your old social media. You'll thank me when you're as old and grumpy as I am.
Also, if you're on social media right now, just literally have a filter. That's all I'm saying. Like, you don't have to censor yourself, but just like filter yourself before you post, because I see people. I have a lot of friends who are.
Is that not self?
Well, I mean, like the dancing. I mean, the electronic dancing. I have a lot of friends who are like, you know, 20 to 24 years old, younger than me, and they like post every one of their problems on Facebook and stuff like that. And it's like, look, I understand you're trying to vent or something, but like all this stuff is just sitting out there, and like 5 years from now, when you like find the person you want to marry and they're like reading all this, like, it's just
your
not...
herpes is really bad. I read about.
Yeah, I don't know. It's social media is nice, but you do not have to utilize it every second of every day. You can still be picky about the things you share with the world.
Look at that, Tom. I derailed our conversation. Are you proud of me?
It feels good, doesn't it?
It doesn't. I feel awful now. Yeah, like, I feel like everyone who's like listening to me because I talk about magic.
You can spoil your feelings. It's okay.
Ranted about Star Wars spoilers and now is admonishing me like my dad. This guy's an ass. That's where I now feel ashamed for what I've done.
Well, that means you have a... Are you from the Midwest? Do you have like a healthy just general shame that's kind of instilled into you in the Midwest? You're shameful of your body, your thoughts, everything else.
I light bridges on fire. I'm not like Jersey, New York, like where I like beat people down with clubs, but I'm more like, I could do without.
You don't even have lights in the bathroom because you change in the dark, you know, because you don't need to see what's going on here.
Yeah. Sure.
So obviously we're not going to delve, we've talked a lot about, I guess, just spoilers in general, the milieu of spoilers. Are we going to give ourselves, like, so we're not going to go through all of them. Are we allowed to do, like, one pick?
Go for it.
I know what one you want to talk about.
I do, and this is an official one. We're even...
Share it on the World Magic Cup. Do it.
It is legit, and that is Crush of Tentacles. Because it's a great... To me, every time I hear Tentacles, I'm assuming you guys know the movie Better Off Dead. Right? To me, I think of Crush of Testicles. It's like, nope. Have you seen Better Off Dead with John Cusack? If you say no, I'm going to be literally shocked if you haven't seen Better Off Dead.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to either one of you. Adam's just sitting there like he's frozen.
I may or may not have seen it. I don't not think so.
Oh, my God.
I am not intimately familiar.
Wow. Okay. So it was a very early John Cusack comedy film. Phenomenal. This came out. I'd have to pull up the exact date. I'm assuming early 90s, late 80s. I'm sorry. I don't know the year off the top of my head. This was like our family movie. Where this is before you could literally buy VHS movies, I actually contacted a distributor to try to buy one of the ones you sent, like video stores would buy, and there were hundreds of dollars at that point. And we almost bought one. That's when we watched this movie. And in there, a French foreign exchange student was trying to use her English language skills, and she kept talking about how one guy kept trying to put his testicles all over her, and she meant tentacles. So Crush of Tentacles is four blue. It's a sorcery.
Just smooth as peanut butter.
Yeah.
Just right onto the card.
It's the same way I do like, if you're doing like a general history, do you do drugs? Do you do this? Sexually active?
Any insert any foreign objects into your butt?
Mm-hmm. Are they biodegradable? Not biodegradable?
I'm sure they know.
Mm-hmm. So, Crush of Tentacles, four blue. It's a sorcery. I think it is a mythic rare, as far as I can tell.
Yes,
definitely mythic.
Cool, because it gave us one of the new mechanics. It seems like a fun one. So, it has its actual text is return all non-land permanents to their owner's hand. If Crush of Tentacles surge cost was paid, put an 8/8 blue octopus creature token onto the battlefield. And surge says three blue with a reminder text of you may cast the spell for its surge cost if you or a teammate, kind of interesting terminology, has cast another spell this turn.
So
this is referring to a lot of the two-headed giants that this would be an important set for that.
Yeah, specifically this set is designed for two-headed giants, so that's the reason surge works that way. Quick note, I don't like that they said you may pay this card for its surge cost when they changed kicker to say if this was kicked. Like, and I thought that was awesome. It was like, if this was kicked, do X.
If this was surged.
Like, why this, if this was surged, or if you surge this, or when you surge this, or something like that. Like, why do you have to say if you pay surge costs? It just, it takes
would
away.
That, like, affect, like, well, converted mana
costs? I think the difference is because kicker is an optional cost, additional cost that you pay. Surge is a replacement cost.
Well, it is a replacement cost, but you do not have to pay it. Like, you can play a spell and then still cast this for 6 mana if, like, you had, let's say, something in play that would kill you if you cast a creature, for example. Like, you don't have, you're not required to just cast Surge because you've cast another spell this turn. You can always
choose. So it's an intervening if to check to say, hey, did you pay for Surge? If so, you do this other thing.
Oh, I know. I would just like to say if Crush of Tentacles was Surged, put an 8/8 blue octopus into play instead of its Surge cost was paid or something like that. It just sounds, I don't know. It just takes a little bit of the flavor out of it. Overall, power level wise, this card is incredibly strong, just to make that clear. Any 0 mana or 1 mana spell, I mean, to be honest, you could probably cast a 2 or 3 mana spell with this and still feel fine with it. Like, getting pseudo upheaval, obviously not bouncing lands, makes it different than upheaval, but getting pseudo upheaval and an 8/8 for 5 mana is just, like, that is a crazy good rate by any standards, let alone in standard. Like, this could see modern play, potentially. It's just, like, a big, beefy, interesting thing to do for 5 mana, just make an 8/8 that bounces your opponent's board. But yeah,
You've got Gitaxian Probe and Gutshot, by the way, and Modern supporting these.
Or Mox Opal that, like, gets you this on turn 4 or something, like, and then you recast your Mox Opal right afterwards and make another mana with it. Like, I'm not saying this is an Affinity card, but it could easily see play in Affinity. Like, it's just, it's a very interesting effect with a very powerful ability on it. So I would not be surprised if this saw heavy play. Also, we haven't seen a bounce effect this good since probably Cyclonic Rift, and Cyclonic Rift was one-sided, so there's going to be some interesting things to do with this that we just haven't seen built around in quite a while.
And just the flavor of 8/8, you know, octopus tokens, I like it.
The only thing weird about an octopus being an 8, like, I understand they kind of did this with Kiora. She makes octopus, I believe, is that correct?
Yes.
No, but an 8/8, she does make Krakens, that's what I thought. An 8/8 to me seems like a Kraken, so it's weird to have an 8/8 octopus.
I think they're just referring to 8 for 8 arms. That's my hunch.
Yes, but I'm just saying that they've done 8/8 blue sea creatures before as Krakens, so it's weird that now we're, like, shifting the metaphor to octopuses.
Yeah, you're just prejudiced.
Like, imagine if the 5/5 red flying tokens stopped being dragons and started being, like, I don't know, flying monkeys or whatever.
Griffins, like, I don't know.
Yeah, we've had 5/5 flying red tokens for forever, 4/4 flying red tokens forever. They're always dragons. Why are we switching to something else? But outside of that, the flavor for this is obviously pretty sweet.
On Zendikar, so maybe it's a function of where she is, but Kiora, Master Adepts, actually makes octopus tokens. So she can make Krakens and she can make octopuses depending
on her. So she makes Krakens on her first card and octopuses on her second card.
So even she's confused.
Well, apparently there's just octopuses and Krakens are just the same thing. They're both 8/8.
Call them cracked. Oh, I was going to say cracktopuses, but that just sounds bad.
The only 8/8 octopus I know of is Lorthos, and that guy's the boss, so I love Lorthos.
Yeah, so this one just tickled. It sounds like it has a lot of power play.
Wait, you're literally, like, about to say fun. This one tickles? You're gonna
it tickles, it tickles my tentacles.
Octopus card? Mm-hmm. Come on, Tom, get it together.
That one's mine, guys. And that it took all my willpower not just to pick Wace, the base of Langs. It just looks cool.
All right, so I feel like if I have to pick a card, I got to talk about a card that's going to go in my my red green. So there's a bunch of cards. I'm not going to give away them all, but there's a bunch of cards that got spoiled that seem really awesome in my red green Dust Devils deck, which is my red green ramp deck with Crumble to Dust and Oblivion Sower combination. And naturally, I expected some number of cool cards to come out to support it, just because essentially any Eldrazi is good in the deck because I play with From Beyond.
World Breaker seems like it's designed for your deck.
I'm just saying that essentially any Eldrazi could be viable because I play From Beyond, so tutoring up a single Eldrazi is way easy. In addition, all the cool lands that affect Eldrazi, which you have to expect there's going to be some number of them, those can all go in the deck pretty easily. And any type of, like, red-green ramp shenanigans, which you almost have to anticipate being in an Eldrazi set. Like, there has to be some form of mana acceleration. Any of that's also going to be considered. So I was already expecting, like, a bunch of cool stuff to come out. But I did not expect this card, so I'm going to read it. Kozilek's Return. I think this is our first mythic pyroclasm ever, if I'm not wrong. We've had a couple rare.
God, it is mythic, isn't it? Yeah. I thought in my mind it was rare.
Yeah, we've had a couple of rare, like we have Radiant Flames in Standard, we've had Anger of the Gods and stuff like that, but I think this is our first Mythic sweeper of this effect. Not kind of Bonfire of the Damned, of course, that's like an absurd card. But Kozlik's Return is an instant, it is devoid, 2 colors and a red. It deals 2 damage to each creature, so it is instant speed pyroclasm. Whenever you cast an Eldrazi creature spell with converted mana cost 7 or greater, you get to cast Kozlik's Return from your graveyard. If you do, it deals 5 damage to each creature. Also, I thought for... Oh, no, it is exile. I was going to say, I thought it exiled itself, and then I missed it. But it's you may exile Kozlik's Return from your graveyard if you do it. So you don't actually cast it. So you can't counterspell this the second time around. So you exile it as a part of its trigger, and it deals 5 damage to each creature. This will happen while your Eldrazi is on the stack, so your Eldrazi will not take damage, which is important to note. So you can cast a 5 toughness Eldrazi, and it will not die. But this card is just... I don't know, it's kind of everything you want in this style of deck because it gives you that early game reset effect to kind of take some of the pressure off yourself and make sure that you're not dying. Also, it costs 3 mana, which is kind of a nice spot because, at least in my decks, I've been playing a lot of 2-drop accelerants and a lot of 4-drop accelerants because the natural pattern is 2-drop into 4-drop. So this kind of fills that gap and goes, hey, did you miss your 2-drop or did your 2-drop die to a removal spell or whatever, and you really need to kind of recover? Here's this nice turn that you otherwise would not be doing anything, and you could fit this in, kind of save yourself some damage. And then later on, when I cast my Ulamog or my... I'll name his name. I'm not going to read his text. The Worldbreaker, which is also very awesome and probably going to play to my deck. If I cast that guy, all of a sudden I'm dealing 5 damage to everything, rewiping up the board, dealing with the maybe 1 threat in to kill with the 2 damage part of this, taking out everything, and then also having a gigantic threat in the play afterwards is like exactly where I want to be. Casting a threat, having an empty board, and being the one back on the offensive is exactly where Ramp Deck wants to be. So I expect this card to see pretty heavy play. Obviously, its secondary condition is a little hard to trigger. Not every deck's going to be able to do it. But assuming that you're playing even, I don't know, 2+ Eldrazi that can trigger this, it's something worth considering.
That's Adam's turn.
So a card that I'm excited for is it's actually one of the expeditions. So one of the expeditions is Horizon Canopy. This is a card originally in Future Sight. All it does is, you know, a handy little, you know, you can it's basically a pain land for green and white. Okay, but it's got one generic mana. Tap, sacrifice it, draw a card. So it's one of those cards that just kind of, you know, fits really nice in green-white decks or you know, Abzan-type decks, things that want access to green and white. But it's also a land that just basically effectively cycles your land for the turn if you need it. Like, I can play it, I can tap another land, and basically for 2 mana, sacrifice this land that I didn't need anyway, I can draw a card. I really like those kind of effects in Commander, being able to, like, turn one resource into another. They're good for competitive play. You know, it's a card that's played in Legacy and Modern, as far as I'm aware, at least from the list that I know of. But it's an expedition, and I don't have a foil of it yet. So I've typically foiled out most of my lands for Commander, and I've got all the original shock lands in foil. I've got 4 Blackwater dual lands for the original dual lands. I try to get cool versions of cards. I don't have a cool version of Windswept Heath yet. So my hope is, like, my first draft, my pre-release pack or something, I sit down, crack it open, and there it is, a foil that I need, ready to go in my deck. Hopefully I'll be able to, like, trade for one or pick one up or, find a deal on it. But, like, it's a card that I love for Commander, and I'm just excited to get a cool, another foil version out there for me to grab.
Ironically, Horizon Canopy is one of my favorite lands ever. I've played that card in, I think, every single format. I love that card to death. And it happens to be when I hate foils, like, because you can't really play them competitively unless you have an entire foil deck, because it just shuffles weird and they cut weird and it's just not good to do. But ironically, I have a playset of foil Horizon Canopies. It's like one of the only playsets of foil cards. I might have sold it with my collection. I don't think I did, just because I know I love that card so much and I don't think it was worth a ton. But yeah, that's like one of the few cards that I actually vividly know I have a playset of foils of, because every time I would go to, like, put one into my Knight of the Reliquary decks, I'd be like, oh, I gotta borrow a Horizon Kid because all mine are foil. By the way, I would like to read, I'm gonna change one word in this line of text, but it is functionally, it's essentially the same word, but I'm just gonna read you this sentence on a card in the set, and I want you to tell me how crazy this sounds. And it's not like a fancy card that like I'm going to spoil for anybody. All right. Tap, pay one life, add one mana of any color to your mana pool, spend this mana only on colorless spells.
It sounds insane if I didn't know about Devoid.
Exactly. It actually says cast a spell with Devoid, but the card essentially says tap, pay one life, add one mana of any color to your mana pool, spend this colored mana only on colorless spells. I just find that line of text like completely
baffling. And smoke a hookah pipe.
Yeah, it's just it's on a land, and it's just there's a ton of lands that obviously tap for special mana in the set, and it's just every time I read that card, I'm like, I know where you're going for, but you literally printed a card that makes any colored mana just only be spent on
colorless. What?
Damn anyway, it! That's my nitpick of the day.
Yes, I would say it does not roll off the tongue very well. So. I'm kind of curious from you from a commander's perspective. Obviously, we have a number of colorless legends that are out there. Are you excited that we have what amounts to a colorless basic land? Does that excite you like from a deck building, just from a pure thematic, now I can truly make this thing colorless?
First of all, to clear something up, I assume the colorless symbols on like Kozilek or whatever doesn't actually restrict you. Like if you chose Kozilek as your guy, you could just run any colorless cards in your deck.
Yeah. Well, so Commander. So,
to color identity is colorless. Yeah.
Commander identity is the colors of mana symbols in costs and in costs and abilities of your commander. Is the color identity of a card. So, for example, from Time Spiral, there's
like Memnarch is blue,
the Saperling guy, or the Thalid guy, and he's green to cast, but he has an ability that costs green black. Originally, when Commander started up and it was Elder Dragon Highlander, you couldn't use him as your commander because he had green in his mana cost, but he had a black in his ability, so therefore he was illegal. They updated it to just make it so anywhere a color symbol appears, it goes in. So like Memnarch, which is colorless to cast but has blue activated abilities, is a blue commander. Mm-hmm. So Thelen of Havenwood, that was the card I was thinking of. So for Kozilek, the color identity is colorless, so you can only use cards that have a color identity that are also colorless. So most artifacts, most non-basic lands that typically don't produce colored mana. What makes it exciting for me is a while ago, once I started building commander decks, I realized that cards that broke the commander rule, like basic lands, were actually, significantly more powerful in that format. Because when you're dealing with singletons, anything that lets you do things, effectively have multiple copies, is powerful. So that's why, like, recasting your commander was a very powerful thing to do in the format, because it's effectively like having multiple copies. The commander's never gone forever. So finally having a basic land that you can use instead of having to track down, like, 40 different non-basic lands.
Just garbage, a lot of times
kind
of garbage
lands. You're
throwing
stuff in like Griffin Canyon and, Winding Canyon and, all kinds of stuff just because it gave you colorless mana. Now it's pretty easy to put a deck together. If you open a foil waste, hold on to it, sell it for a premium. Like, I'm going to need foil wastes. I don't know where I'm going to get them because I'm going to need a lot of them and they're going to be worth money.
Also, for what it's worth, it's still, if you do build a colorless deck, it's still probably good to, put as many of those non-basics that actually do stuff in your deck, because there are a lot of cool colorless non-basics, but now you can play with 10 or 11 wastes, which is probably what you want to do, instead of zero.
Well, it now combines with so many things that colorless decks didn't have access to. Like, you couldn't use Solemn Simulacrum, because you didn't have a basic land you could fetch. Now
you like
do.
Evolving
you can
Wilds.
Use Evolving Wilds to thin your deck. You can use... or put a card in your graveyard for some sort of delve cost or something like that, some sort of exile ability later. You've got, Weathered Kite, the artifact that lets you search up basic lands from Kamigawa block. Like,
And there's the colorless land that you pay two and tap and sacrifice to get two basics out of your deck. That one's probably sweet there too.
Yes, yeah, that one now works with
it's a commander card, I think. So
basically, it brings colorless decks up to a similar playing field that all of the other colors of decks had. It makes it much easier to build around Kozilek or Ulamog. Or a colorless artifact, some sort of legendary artifact that you want to build. It feels really good from that manner. One of the things that I like about it is that this is R&D's first leveraging of an area I'm surprised they haven't tapped into before, which is using BASIC as a card type on more than just, you know, lands.
Yeah, without like the subtype. Theory,
you know, for example, why isn't something like a Grizzly Bear, why isn't there just, you know, not like Runeclaw Bear, but like, you know, Angry Bear. You know, that's a terrible name, but some sort of generic bear, and it's a 2/2 for one and a green, but it's just a basic creature. Which means you could make a deck of just, you know, all basic, all of these bears if you wanted. You could put 5 in a deck, you could put 6 in a deck, that in limited, you can use any number of a card that you draft. So, like, legally, you can draft 5 or 6 or 7 of a common, you know, and I don't know if you've ever had that happen to you before, Conley.
Yeah, sure. Specifically in Cold Snap, that was the big time.
Yeah, you could draft multiples of these cards beyond 4 and play them all, because that's what the rules of limited say. Like, you draft your deck and you get to play it. It doesn't adhere to the 4 of rule. And that's all BASIC does, is basically opens up this design space where it's like, we don't need to reinvent the bear, the grizzly bear, every set.
But it wasn't until 8th edition that we even had the basic land type, though, right? Set,
you know, and, like, it's there. And it's just what that creature does. You know, like that type of idea of limiting, you know, not having to constantly reinvent. Because, like, there are infinite 2/2s for a green and a colorless now. Like, I can play a deck full of them if I want. But, like, there's no reason I shouldn't just have one copy of a card that's super easy to find and can be, you know, printed over and over and over and over and over. Like, cancel should just be a basic card. It's in almost every big set. It's constantly being reprinted. You know, there's like 12 printings since it was invented in like Time Spiral. You know, it's like, it should just be like a basic card. Blue gets a counterspell for 3 mana. And that's just what it has, always. And so, like, I'm kind of curious to see, like, if Waste is successful, will we see an evolution of this, you know, mentality where, like, let's just not reinvent the wheel every set. Like, we know we're going to put these 10 cards or these 5 types of cards in almost every set. Let's just go ahead and do that and make it so we can focus more on designing, you know, cards that we know that we're going to need and we want to play with and, like, bring flavor to the set than just coming up with yet another generic 2/2 for something on this plane.
I get where you're coming from, but I doubt it'll happen. Well, from a design perspective, the 2/2, the generic 2/2 on this plane, while it functionally is similar to a grizzly bear, there is a lot of storytelling there. What creature type you give it, the artwork that it, what it depicts going on there, the flavor text. Like, there is a bit of a puzzle type of thing where, like, yes, this is a 1,000-piece puzzle, and a couple of these pieces might be the same as some other puzzle, but they're still essential to kind of, like, paint the overall picture to give you the full scope. So while I think that functionally, if Magic was just about the numbers, that you could do basic bear pretty easily, I think that they kind of use those spaces, the kind of given consistent spaces, to flesh out the world, to get you kind of involved in this fantasy setting a little bit better. And obviously there are sometimes where it is functionally matters, like in Lorwyn, like the 2/2 being an elf or whatever is clearly very different when it's Cillian Elf versus Grizzly Bear. But then other times, you know, when it's just Woodwalker who is a treant or whatever, you're like, oh, okay, that's cool that there's tree folk in this set. But then they also get to then take that same idea and put it in, like, Mirrodin, where it now has Metalcraft +1/+1, and you're like, this is strictly better than a Grizzly Bear. I know to take this and draft it and do... So, it has a lot of anchoring advantages and stuff like that. Basically, I just think it has a lot of, like, little small advantages to picking out the things, although I don't think what your idea is bad or anything of that nature. I just do think there are some advantages to picking a random 2/2 and making it your
kind, yeah, of... I guess I can
see... For example, when it's in Lorwyn, or not Lorwyn, Innistrad, the 2/2 for 2, like, baseline was Walking Corpse, and, like, it being a zombie was hugely relevant. For example, you would chump block with it and then play your Gravedigger card the very next turn and return it randomly, and there was all kinds of weird synergies with it and stuff, and, like, everything just kind of changed, even though that the base 2/2 for 2 functionality was very much still there.
But I guess I could see it being both for you guys, as I'd say it's still important that the creature type would vary to set, but it seems like it'd be really powerful to have, instead of just we have a legendary creature, we have creature. If you have a basic creature, you could have cool spells like search for a basic creature and put it into your hand.
Oh, that's fair.
Yeah, so I could kind of see it being both, where you could still have the unique creature type to each set that, you know, goes with the flavor of the story. But if you had a basic creature type, that would, to me, potentially be really interesting. It could almost be like a new format. We don't have Pauper anymore, we have basic, where every card in your deck has to be of a basic type.
Yeah, so like, So, Conley, there already is a card in every booster pack that is evocative of the location we're at, but is printed in every single block and set, and that's the basic lands. And so, sure. Like, that would be, like, you know, I think there's some execution solutions that kind of bring it closer. Like, if you know that, you know, you're just going to have a 2-2 for 2, like, maybe you have multiple kinds of basic creatures, right? Like, you could have a basic bear on the plane where it matters, but you have a basic elf on the plane where that matters. And it's still just a 2-2 for 2. Perhaps it's relevant to the draft format, but it's still just a basic creature. Does what it does. Like, you know, I'm kind of hesitant because, like, I like the idea of, like, what Tom's saying. That's kind of where I was going, where, like, you kind of open up the space where, like, you can search for basically an innocuous card, but suddenly innocuous cards in volume or doing something in conjunction with something else can be very powerful, and so, like, there's an appeal there, but, like, it just feels like it's adding, you know, doesn't it feel like unnecessary complexity at that point? Like, search for a basic card. Well, how clever is that, really, if I can get a land or a, you know, or a 2-2 bear, but, you know, maybe there's a world where, like, that's super relevant somehow. But it just feels just very strange that you have this basic resource, but you also don't have basic pieces to go with it. And then kind of you, the magic sets are the trappings that go over top of that. You know, sure. Like, think about, like kind of the comparison point I was making is, like, things where, like, you know, kind of like the free-to-play games. There's typically, you know, if you play, like, free-to-play RPGs or free-to-play kind of collectible card games, like, because I've tried a whole bunch to, like, what can I do that's cool? What can I, you know, what can I work on that's fun? You know, what is this thing that somebody else is talking about? There are basic pieces in that game, and everything else is actually the cool stuff. Like, the basic pieces don't get you anywhere, can't do anything cool, don't have any really special place in the game. They just get you into it and introduce you in a very straightforward and clear way. And they define what things do, what makes, you know, one faction different from another faction are these very, very common basic things that you start off with. And that was kind of, that's kind of the direction that I was pushing at, is that it'd be great if Magic could not just say the lands are basic, but also, like, these are officially the things that define what the colors are. And they very, very clearly show, like, the green creatures in spell looks different from the blue creature in spell, and it makes it abundantly clear that these colors do different things and have different approaches when you battle, rather than kind of hiding it in, like, the, well, let's put the common in every set and players will get it. Sometimes they open a booster pack and they don't see that, and I think that little basic flag, they see basic land, oh, that's an important resource, basic creature, oh, basic creature must be important too, like, this tells me what the color does, you know. I'd just be curious to see what that would do for the game if you clearly define what the most essential elements of a color are by making them basic.
I would kind of worry about, in that world, losing, like, the slight twist cards. Like, for example, there's a lightning bolt in basically every set, but you add scry to it in the set with scry, you add flashback in the set with flashback, things like that. And if there was just a basic bolt, for example, that replaced all those cards, that would feel kind of lame. So I think you would have to do it, like, in addition to those cards, which I'm sure certain could be built around, but, like, something like that where, like, you add the set's flavor to the cards, I think you would still want to preserve those. You wouldn't want to replace every counter spell with cancel, because having the dragon counter spell is, like, really cool, for example. So there is a fine line you kind of have to walk there, where it's like, yeah, we want the color pie in there, but we also want to, like, show you, hey, cons has its own take on counterspell. We don't just have cancel, because, yes, cancel is printed in every single set. That could easily be a basic, but they would still need to just be like, well, this is not occupy the only common counterspell in the set, or the only common and uncommon counterspell in the set. We're going to have another one or two, etc. But I think that's not a terrible idea.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, we already see some of that within sets. From rarity,
sure,
right?
Like Lightning Strike will get reprinted multiple times, and then simultaneous to that, there's, like, what was the other one? It was three damage. Oh, Keranos's Bolt, the Bolt of Keranos. Like, that was printed right alongside Lightning Strike. It's like, pay another mana, get a sorcery speed, but then we tack on Scry 1, and all of a sudden it's, like, very important because this is in the set. We have a bunch of Scry Matters type stuff and whatnot.
Well, I was also going to say, we also see it at rarity levels. Like, there's a common 2-2 for 2 that's vanilla, but then there's, like, a, you know, an uncommon.
Sure.
2-2 for the same cost, but it's got, like, some additional abilities. And, like, I think we already see, like, or, like, when you have a non-basic land, like, you know, oh, I've got a, you know, I've got a dual land in this set, but I've also got, you know, a dual land or a tri-land at uncommon. Like, you know, which ones are better? Like, there's this relativity of, like, some are not obvious. Like, do I want a dual land or do I want a tri-land in my deck? Like, I don't actually want this dual fetch land. I want this tri-land if I'm drafting Constark here. And, like, that's, like, a player skill differentiation point.
Sure.
But I think basic just like makes that abundantly clear. Like a basic bear should naturally be less exciting than the twist on a thing bear that looks very, very similar in the set, but obviously like there should be something else going on with that kind of points to a player like, well, if I'm looking at both of these in my packs, why would I want this one that's not basic? You know, like I feel like that's something we already see in some ways with rarities.
Now, did you guys all get like a little bit of warm and fuzzy that when you saw the waste with, because arguably it's a new mana symbol, I'm going to call it a quote sixth color. Do you guys transport yourselves back to 1997 with Inquest when they did the April Fool's episode or article where they introduced the color purple? Do you remember that at all?
Yes.
I got a little bit of warm and fuzzies when I saw them. Like, I finally got my purple.
I mean, it's not quite. This will probably be on like less than 20. This is effectively snow mana.
Purple.
In terms of its impact as a six color, it's effectively snow mana. Like, we're not going to see cards printed with the color symbol in every single set. I highly doubt it. Like, they're going to do it in an Eldrazi set. They're going to do it anytime it makes sense. But like when we revisit Mirrodin, for example, we're not just going to see a bunch of color symbols on the mana cost. Like,
so which set would be appropriate for purple then to be in?
Time Spiral.
Like, I'm thinking, like, do you think they would, like, I haven't gotten my third unset
yet. There you go. There you're third.
Give me purple in that set. I know it's not legal.
We need to get to some non-magical topics. I'm feeling a little too much magic right now.
Quite a bit, actually.
We've diligently talked about the cast. I derailed us on some Star Wars litigation.
I mean, even that, it was so quick of a derailment, and it was related in some way, so it never really...
It was nerd culture, wasn't it all?
We didn't talk about, like, prostates or... I don't know.
Prostate health is important.
But anyway, I think what Conley's saying is it's time to wrap the show. Which means we need to do our outro, which means we should start with me, go to Conley, and then go to you, and you get us our nice derailment.
Yeah, then we're going to talk about vacuum robots.
That you've already leaked. It's about cat ovens. So
I got a whole list.
Yeah, you got your list. You can check it twice, because we're all naughty here. No one's nice. I'm the Stibs, Adam Sworsky. You can find me on Twitter at @_Stibs, STYBS. Write about Commander, I write about my cube, I write about Magic, I do LOL. Woo, lots of fun stuff.
Hack moving.
Ooh. Yeah, moving. So, yeah, there's just going to be like less stuff behind me as we record week after week. That's a good thing.
When will we maybe see an entirely different background there?
Later in January.
Later in January, okay.
Yeah, I'll have a different background. I'll have like a temporary background, a little place I'll call home via Airbnb, and then I'll have a looking for like an actual new home to move into. So we'll have some moves in the future. It'll be fun. Conley.
So you can find me on Twitter, Conley81. I've been streaming significantly more. I stream every Sunday. I'm also going to be streaming either tomorrow or Wednesday. I'm not sure which. Wednesday is my birthday, so I might just do a birthday stream after dinner or something. You can find me at Conley81 on Twitch. I should get a subscriber button soon, but I've been doing that pretty consistently. Also, articles on ccgplayer.com. And kind of just getting more back into Magic, so you're likely to see me more events. I think I'm going to go to Grand Prix Vancouver, which is at the end of January. My grandpa lives in Seattle, so it gives me an excuse to visit him. Otherwise, you can find me on the dance floor. Got my new shoes.
Yeah, so we were talking before we started recording that, are these Nikes designed specifically for dancing? Like, you said they were a dance shoe.
Well, so they're recommended by everyone who dances. They're not designed for dancing, they're designed for basketball.
I would say like a broomball shoe would be really good for dancing. A little grippy, but...
Well, no, I don't want... See, the thing is, I don't want a lot of grip. I want enough grip to where I'm not falling on my ass, but I need some freedom to, like, slide my feet around as well. So, like...
How about tap shoes?
Cleats would be terrible. That's, like, the extreme version of grip or whatever. Like, that would not work.
Tap shoes. So, they're slidey.
So, like, for example, Converse, like, these are pretty... If you look at the bottoms, like, they're pretty flat. They're, like, this is effectively a decent amount of grip, and most basketball shoes have similar...
Yeah, so you don't want the knobbies, right? That would not be good. Bad. This would be bad. Yeah.
Well, A, those are going to wear out unevenly because you use different parts of your foot differently when you dance. So, like, I'm doing a lot of stuff on my heels and my toes.
So you would end up with,
like, an uneven thing, and then you would just start getting, like, bad foot stuff. But those are, like, good for walking because when you're walking, you're always coming down directly, evenly, where all your things are kind of touching at the same time. When you're dancing, you're sliding and doing a lot of friction and stuff. So you need, like, low friction. And then I personally prefer high tops because I like to protect my wrists or my ankles.
How high of shoes are these, man? Holy smokes.
I like to protect my ankles. Some people like low tops. I think they're crazy if you use low tops. But you can find me if you're in Colorado. I'll be at Decadence. Otherwise, pretty much any, you can imagine any Grand Prix I go to, I'm probably going to find some place to dance on a Friday night. So if you're interested, come join me.
My New Year's Eve Decadence is going to be drastically different than yours.
Decadence, yeah, it's literally like, so I danced on Friday at Parade of Lasers, which is a pretty long show. I think I got there at like 8:45 and I stayed till about 1:30 in the morning.
Oh god, you're killing me.
And it's, I danced 8:45
is bedtime.
I danced 37,000 steps, which is a little over 16 miles according to my my phone. And the thing is, when you're dancing, you're not taking like straight steps. So even though the distance is only 16 miles, it's like even more than that in terms of like.
That means your arms probably traveled like 100
miles. I'm still sore today. Like I have not done any of my gym stuff today because I'm so sore from it. But, and that was on Friday. But yeah,
I was sore, but that's because we were in a McDonald's Playland and I was hauling kids up and they were going down the slide.
Fair.
So I
hit 215 pounds, which is a new low.
Okay, this is a good kind of low.
Yeah, it's 158 pounds from my maximum. I was 373 at my biggest, and I'm now about 215. So,
do you have like a bottom though? Obviously, you don't want to go too low.
The thing about this weight loss is I never once like went into it to lose weight. I didn't even, it just, losing weight just happened. Like I just fell in love with dancing and started dancing, and losing weight just happened. I never once like set a goal for myself. I've done that before with weight loss. But this time it just came about as a result of it, and when I noticed it, I kind of did a few things to further it and to keep it on track. Like I've been doing a little bit of upper body weightlifting, and whatnot, and toning and things of that nature. And I cut out soda from my diet. But I never there's never been a dedicated diet. There's never been I need to hit the gym Tuesday at 7 a.m. otherwise I'm cheating myself. I don't have cheat days or anything like that. I just do everything normally and just make sure that I'm significantly more active than I was, and it's worked out.
God, I some days you miss the single life.
You're
gymnastics, and then
because you're an old man that's married. But the thing is, like in the scene that I'm in, like I'm the old man. Like 28 is absurdly old to be like into the rave scene and like going to shows and dance. Like everyone's like 21 to 24, and they're like, you're old. But then I go harder than everybody, so I don't care.
What? Okay.
What? By the way, I have to squeeze the last 2 days of 28. I'm going to say I'm 28 the next 2 days, like 30 times a day.
Yeah, because
once you hit 29, you know you're just a year away. Year away.
29 is not like an important milestone.
No, 29 is not. But you have a year left.
I guess it's
20s.
A prime number. It's about as big as I can give you.
I've actually enjoyed getting older. I just it's been good.
Tom, it's good until you hit 50, and then they start sticking cameras and whatnot. And pretty much every hole you have.
Yeah, but by the time I'm 50, we'll be like cryogenically frozen.
Yeah, and then you then get to the first prostate biopsies, and that is terrifying.
All right, Tom.
Have you ever heard of prostate biopsy?
I actually know what a prostate biopsy is.
Do you know what it is? But you know what? Have you ever heard it though? Like that they actually
heard
use, like,
it
this...
happen? No, I've never heard it happen.
Because it's actually like this sort of looks like a colonoscopy thing, put it in the rectum, and basically on the top there's these needles that shoot into the prostate to do the biopsy, and it makes like this sound when they do it. Usually followed by a sort of a muffled moan or scream. As a med student, you got to help with this, and it was terrifying. You're just like, please let my prostate. I mean, all of us will get prostate problems at the end, but I want mine to go as slow as possible.
When I mentioned
you have a prostate,
the show with prostates, I was trying to pick something ridiculous that I didn't think he would actually derail the show with. I apologize, everybody, for giving him an idea.
Well, then we can also talk about like chronic prostatitis, where you actually prescribe masturbation because you need to make sure basically that you don't get backed up. That's actually true.
So, Tom, what I'd like to know more about is your cat oven that you've installed to bake your cat.
Yeah, so people are aware I live in Minnesota, so even though this is an El Nino year, so it's going to be warmer than usual. Normally it gets, like last year, it was butt cold, below zero a lot.
But and you don't use butt to describe cold. That's not a cold thing.
That is a Minnesota term, butt cold.
Butt cold is not a thing. Your butt is warm.
I ask people from cold temperatures. That is a very common saying. How cold is it? It is.
It doesn't matter if it's common. It's wrong.
No, it says basically it doesn't matter like how much you're wearing. Your butt will be cold while you're outside. It doesn't matter if you're wearing pants with thermals under. Your butt's still going to be cold because it's like the biggest, meatiest part hanging out from you. Or if you sit while ice fishing, that also tends to get cold.
Ice fishing? You don't make up. All right, go ahead. Continue, Tom.
Okay. It was butt cold out. So the cat, Lincoln, the cat that has to go outside, will go nuts. And of course, we can't leave the cat to orbit anymore because people have listened for a long time. The damn cat would bring in like 3 live animals a night. So it was banned from the use of the cat door anymore. So now you have to let it in and out. But of course, now if it doesn't want to come in, we go to bed early. It's stuck outside all night. And as a family, we're concerned. We don't want the cat to get frostbite because if their ears fall off, they just look bad. So I got a heated cat hut. So it's on her porch. You plug it in. It actually has a heating pad.
How heated does it get?
It's like a heating pad.
But like how warm?
450 degrees for 30 minutes.
So have you ever used like a heating pad?
I wonder if you're just like...
Look, a heat pad. It's like the little
lower
squares.
Lower than 250 for 8 hours.
It's a heating... You plug in the wall, it just gets warm.
It's like a crock pot for cats. It's
is there like...
Do you seriously not have never used a heating pad?
I mean, I've used a heating pad. I've never given one to my cat. I assume this is like in like a doghouse style.
Yeah, thing. it's like a flexible doghouse.
How expensive was this particular product?
This was off of Amazon with free shipping. Was $60.
Okay,
that's but it came with a pad and.
I thought you were going to go to like the $500, $600 mark or something, and I was going to have.
I've looked. I shopped.
That's fair.
I take my cat care very seriously. And then we also got a vacuuming robot.
I spent more on these shoes than you did on your cat hut.
The cat hut looks nowhere near as cool as that. We'll put some stickers on it. But
by the way, I mentioned this before the cast, but you can't get black or white dance shoes because black shoes don't show up while you're dancing. And when you do a lot of footwork, you want people to see your feet, obviously.
That way they're silver?
And yeah, and white.
Do they have like the because like all kids' shoes light up now? Do they light like when you step? Does
no,
the light
they
up?
Do have those, but obviously when you put lights in shoes, you're like changing the weight, you're adding a bunch of extra inches to the bottom, like doing a bunch of stuff that isn't practical for dance. They do have some cool LED shoes that are really, really expensive, and they have you can program like light series, so like they'll literally do patterns regardless of what you're dancing to, in addition to picking up sound and all kinds of stuff. But those are very expensive, and I wear a size 17, I guess 16 dance shoe, but I wear a large shoe, so I have to order everything special. So once you're talking about a special shoe that then you have to get special made on top of that, it gets like astronomical price.
Yeah, there's a Kickstarter right now for shoes that have an e-ink display on the side, so you basically program your own graphics onto the shoe.
Yeah, I've seen those as well.
Yeah, those are
and they're for like street artists or something like that, which is pretty cool. But yeah, in terms of like having cool looking and being functional, this is about as wacky as I'm willing to go. But yeah, they are silver, so they do show up while I'm dancing, but they don't get super dirty like white shoes do, where like I have to dunk them in a bucket of bleach after every single show.
But Dan, you want to show up more than your feet, so shouldn't you be wearing like a silver headband, like silver arm wraps, silver shirt?
I mean,
silver hot pants.
Noticing other parts of your body, it tends to be significantly easier because lights are on those things, like when you're dancing. But I would say for me, while I do want to show off those other things, my footwork is probably my best quality when it comes to dancing. So that's something that I specifically do want to show.
You're highlighting that.
Yes.
Okay. And we also got I got my wife for her Christmas, we got a vacuuming robot. It says thank you for listening, but we haven't talked about the Roomba 980 yet. I'll save that for the next episode because it's very important.
No, you talked about prostates instead. You had your moment in the sun and you decided to go with prostates, Tom.
What? I think it's something that will affect literally all men. I mean, at some point, you'll have a prostate problem.
Finally up to speed with the rest of the world and you're baking cats outside of your house. That's the best place to do it because they sometimes smell. You know, I wouldn't have learned the hard way.
Yeah, like, what happens if the cat poops on this heating pad?
Well, obviously it's going to stink because it's going to be hot poop. I'm going to assume the cat's
you're
smart.
You're going to go outside, there's going to be a steaming hot pile of cat shit waiting
But
for
it's
you.
Also really cold out, so that counteracts it a little bit.
No, that makes it worse because now there's like a big cloud of steam. You're like, what's this? And you put your head in it, and then you go down and you see the shit sitting there.
Yeah, well, first off, I'm just going to stick my head in the cat.
I'm literally having nightmares right now about walking out to cat poop outside.
I'm more worried about
if
there's a non-cat animal in the cat hut, such as like skunks, foxes, raccoons.
All right, fair enough.
Bats. There was a bat living outside of our clinic for a while that named it George.
That was the best name you could... All right.
Little brown.
Tom, where can they find you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Chisago County, Minnesota has the highest rate of rabies in Minnesota. So you can find me on this podcast and at PSG Reader. That's it. As you might be able to guess, I don't write a lot of articles about Magic the Gathering.
You should start streaming. You mentioned it on Twitter. I retweeted you, and you're like, I'm going to get streaming. And all everyone's like, yeah, Tom's streaming. And then you just did nothing with it.
Well, actually, it's still the plan. It's like, I need to watch for streams. I'm not a good at playing Magic, so I would have to talk. Like, do you talk? Like, I have my science articles. I actually researched a scientific...
A, you can talk about literally anything. B, there are plenty of people that stream Magic that are not good at streaming Magic, but they're just entertaining so that they get away with it. C, when you stream Magic, there's an expectation that there will be moments of silence and pauses because there's just way too many things. There's too many times where nothing's going on, and they don't expect you to just fill every single bit of dead air. So it's not like high-pressured, like I'm telecasting the NBA Finals.
Content.
Like yeah, it's not like that. I don't know. I think you should get into it. Adam thinks you should get into it.
Yeah, well, as given we talked about there might be some changes coming up, that might be something fun to explore. In new environments. Because I actually literally researched a scientific segue for adding a 6-color to Magic. I'll save it for next time, though. So it does talk about considering adding a 4th domain to the domains of lifes. So you have eukaryotes, prokaryotes, and arachnia, and then they might now have one for viruses. This is an article from the Nature Journal. And here's one from the BMC Journal of Evolutionary Biology. Titled, Giant Viruses Coexisted with the Cellular Ancestors and Represent a Distinct Supergroup Along with Superkingdoms of Archaea, Bacteria, and Eukarya.
We have to stop you, Tom. We're required to stop you.
I spent time on this at clinic.
There are people right now tightening a noose. We have to stop you.
They want to know about giant viruses and why do they have remnants of protein encoding genes in them. That's weird shit.
In my best judgment, I can no longer be a part of this podcast.
All right. So please send us emails. Apparently, I'm told it's an archaic way of sending information. I enjoy getting emails. So that's mtgpopery@gatheringmagic.com. We already shared all of our other stuff. We talked a lot about Magic today.
About 30 minutes ago.
That's very good.
Too proud of it. Adam, you couldn't contain the beast today. I'm sorry.
I mean, we did for a while. It was straight up racetrack hooked style. Him. And then at some point,
well, it was your fault. You brought prostates.
We dumped them.
100% on you.
We tried to take the secret jump in Mario Kart, the shortcut, and we failed.
Oh, Star Road?
Yeah, that was a bad idea.
Right into the prostate.
All right. Thank you for listening, everyone.
15 needles. All right, I'll stop it here.
Good night.